You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, after being diagnosed with a serious or terminal illness, everything changes. But our guest says we can still hold on to the things that give our lives value. In fact, he says that's essential to our treatment. We find out more as we talk about life after the diagnosis.
First, on December 7th, 1941, Japan bombed the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, drawing the United States into World War II. Then, on February 19th, 1942, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed and issued Executive Order 9066, which allowed for Americans of Japanese, German, and Italian descent to be relocated to camps for what were called national security concerns. On March 9th, Roosevelt signed Public Law 503 to strengthen that executive order.
As a result, approximately 120,000 people of Japanese descent were held in camps around the country. Over two-thirds of them were American citizens. While some German-Americans and Italian-Americans were also detained, their numbers were a small fraction of the Japanese-Americans who were held.
Norm Yamada joins us now from our Eau Claire studios. He was the band director at Barron High School from 1972 to 2005 and is an active musician and sound consultant in Northwest Wisconsin. He gives public presentations about his family's experience in Japanese-American internment camps during World War II. Norm, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, sounds like you've been able to gather the most information on your mother's family during this period. Can you tell us about where her story starts there?
Well, her family was living in San Diego. And at the time of the executive order, my mom was 19, my uncle was 16, and my aunt was 13. And so, you know, that was where they were. My dad was in the upper northern part of California.
And what happened after the executive orders went into effect?
Well, after the executive order was issued, they basically had until May of 1942 to kind of get their possessions, their belongings in order. And so they had to get materials, get things, furniture, cars, stored or sold, and have people take care of their houses and things like that. So, you know, a lot of people came out and said they would take care of these things. Some people lost everything. Some people, like their family, were able to have people that did look after most of their possessions. So by May of 1942, they had to take only what they could carry, get on the train in San Diego, and head up to Santa Anita, which was a racetrack between San Diego and Los Angeles, which was a dispersal center, which then sent them out to the camps.
And where were the camps located in California, I assume, where they went?
There were camps actually all over in Arizona, Utah, Wyoming, California, and even in Arkansas. My mom's family actually ended up in Poston, Arizona, which is just across the border from California along the Colorado River. And there were actually, I believe, three camps at Poston, 1, 2, and 3.
And what have you heard about their time there, what life was like and what it was like to be suddenly removed in totality and sent to live in another state where your movement was restricted?
Well, you know, I didn't get a lot of information on this until my mom was basically in her 70s. When we were kids, they would talk about being in camp. And, of course, when we were small, you know, we didn't really know what camp was exactly. But when they did get to camp, there were rows and rows of barracks. And each barracks was had six 20 by 24 rooms. And each family was assigned to a room. So you would have, in lots of cases, the grandparents, the parents, and the kids all living in one room. There was a pot-bellied stove in the corner, and there were partitions, but they were open along the top, so there wasn't a whole lot of privacy. You know, basically from my parents and my relative's standpoint, I really wish I would have talked to my grandparents more because they were the ones that suffered more of the hardship. But it evolved into a small society out there, because you've got to remember, when you intern all these people, you had doctors, lawyers, teachers, plumbers, electricians, all these trades. So eventually they were able to make the facilities a little more hospitable to themselves, start growing their own food and things like that. But you were still out in a pretty desolate area where you couldn't leave.
So it sounds like when you were a kid, you just thought they were maybe somewhere fun. Camp didn't have that connotation. Do you remember what those first conversations were like with your family? Maybe not your grandparents, if you didn't talk to them as much, but were these difficult conversations to have?
Well, you know, my my family, they kind of adopted an attitude of, you know, that's something that we went through and we could put it behind us. And I know that there are a lot of people who came out of that situation who are much more upset about it and still are to this day. But I know basically, you know, it was just the fact that you were out there and, you know, you couldn't leave. And that was the main thing. I mean, the camps were surrounded by barbed wire fencing. You had guard towers. I've actually been to the Poston site and the Heart Mountain site where my dad was in Wyoming. But the Manzanar site in California is one of the sites where the Park Service has restored some buildings and recreated some of the barracks. And I've been to that site, which is across Death Valley from Las Vegas. And it's pretty desolate. And being that you're out in the desert, pretty much it would be cold at night, a lot of wind, and of course hot in the summer. So I think my mom did tell me once that, you know, there was just sand everywhere. So in your food and it was just every place. So, you know, I wish I really would have talked to my parents more about this. But in giving these talks and doing some research, I've been able to learn quite a bit more about it.
We're talking right now with Norm Yamada, band director at Barron High School from 1972 to 2005, active musician in the area. And he frequently gives public presentations about his family's experience in Japanese-American internment camps during World War II. And Norm, what awaited your family, your mother's family, and your father once they were let out, were free to resume their lives?
Well, the executive order was rescinded in 1944. And my mom did not go back to San Diego. Her brother and sister did. My mom ended up in Chicago along with some other friends of theirs. My dad eventually ended up back in Chicago. They had met before the war. He was in the poultry industry. My mom was in the garment industry. And so my dad, being in that industry, ended up being on a circuit where he would go to all these hatcheries in little towns in Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. And he ended up going to a hatchery where, in Platteville, Wisconsin, where a really great guy, Bob Graham, said, you know, Min, that was my dad's name, you should move here and work for me. So my parents got married. They moved up from Chicago, and that's where they raised our family and actually became, you know, really outstanding citizens of Platteville, Wisconsin.
What would you say were the most enduring effects of that time for your family? It sounds like they were pretty resilient, but are there things that you can look at and trace back to that time?
You know, I don't... You know, and this is just in my family's case, I don't really ever remember them saying anything real, you know, really negative about it. I think it did give them resilience, as you say, and I just think it made them work harder to kind of prove to people that the Japanese Americans could make outstanding citizens and would be hard workers.
Now, some people have today raised concerns that President Trump's executive orders, travel bans, and immigration can be seen as perhaps targeting Muslims, and that this could be reminiscent of what led to the internment of Japanese Americans. Do you see any parallels there?
Well, I think certainly there would be a parallel there. I'm pretty sure here that when the first travel ban came out, when the Washington State Court, when they struck that down, I believe 9066 was mentioned in that ruling as something that, you know, they wouldn't want to repeat. And so, yeah, I think it's very interesting how it's kind of surfaced into the news again, and how it's definitely parallels many of the things that are happening right now.
Norm, thank you so much for coming into the studio there in Eau Claire and talking with us today.
Great. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Norm Yamada was the band director at Barron High School from 1972 to 2005. He's an active musician in that area, and he also gives public presentations about his family's experience in Japanese-American internment camps during World War II.
Coming up after the news, we talk about how to navigate life after being diagnosed with a serious illness. Our guest says our goal should be to live as well as we can for as long as we can. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.